In 1980, a film was released that captured the imagination of a generation and changed the game for science fiction and fantasy forever. This epic journey featured battles amongst the stars, an evil apprentice unleashed by a shrouded, power-mad being bent on ruling the galaxy, and wondrous creatures that defied imagination, with special effects that had to be seen to be believed. Its hero wielded fantastic magical powers while learning the valuable lesson, do or do not. There is no try. The film we are talking about, of course, was The Empire Strikes... Nope! It was Gamera Super Monster. So how bad is Gamera Super Monster? We'll talk about it next on So Bad, It's...
So this is John, and I'm here with my friend Pete, I think. You there, Pete?
I think I am. Yes,
okay.
I am.
Okay. Excellent. All right. It's good that you are.
And that's John without an H, by the way. That's J-O-N.
Yeah.
That's
uncommon John.
Pete without an H, too. No H. Yep. There are no H's
H-G-P.
Were involved in the making of this podcast to this point.
Nope.
Oh, I just said obviously this. There's an H in this. Sorry. I screwed it all up.
Yeah, but no H's were harmed. That's really what's important.
That is an excellent,
am I right?
Excellent point.
Am I right, PETA? Get it?
Mm-hmm.
PETA? See what I did there? All right. So we're going to be kicking off a So Bad It's podcast where we talk about some of the incredibly amazing I'm giggling already entertainment from our childhood, mostly, that at the time seemed awesome because of our 8, 9, 10-year-old selves, and now may or may not seem awesome anymore. We're going to put that. We're going to put some of these things up to the test, so bad it's, and we're going to call them out and label them. What kinds of things are we going to talk about, Pete? We have movies.
We've got movies. I mean, I think one thing John and I have known each other for many, many years, and I think that's one of the things that is kind of formed our friendship is we have an appreciation for these things that we grew up with that shouldn't work, but yet despite all the odds, well, they still don't work, but we have an appreciation for earnest awfulness. So if you're talking about things like a movie like The Room or American Movie, but it's not
King of Kong,
things like that, but not just films. We're going to talk about TV shows. We're going to talk about games. We're going to talk about food. If anyone has experienced the
toys,
Friendly's ice cream, you'll have an idea of what we're talking about there. Toys, rites of
the wonders of childhood.
Yeah, just things that have kind of formed who we are today that we've enjoyed, and they may not have been the most popular or even considered quote very good by much of polite society, but we just have found a way to find the humor and find the earnestness, as I said, in them. And we want to share these things with you. And hopefully some of these things will resonate with you and you can become part of our world here as we explore things that are so bad there, or I guess so bad it's dot, dot, dot.
And it's kind of like a network of crap is what we're basically forming, right?
But lovingly.
Yeah.
We're lovingly caressing crap.
Yes, as you would. All right. So
with gloves, rubber gloves,
of course,
always.
Of course, yeah.
Rubber gloves.
Mm-hmm. Safety first.
John Rentham.
All right. So
lease with an option to buy.
This week we're going to be talking about Gamera Super Monster, which my head is still hurting from watching.
Well, I think we did ourselves a bit of a disservice unbeknownst to us. we picked this movie because it's kind of a Cliff's Notes Gamera version, because it's kind of a mashup. Well, not really a mashup, but basically it was a company that was about to go bankrupt, last gasp at trying to make some money. And so they took all the old Gamera, or clips from all the old Gamera films, and spliced them all into, I guess, a new story in the hopes of making a comeback. And I don't think that they were very successful. And I don't know, maybe we were better off just watching a regular Gamera movie than this one.
I don't know.
It does have its charms. It does have its moments.
Yeah. And especially if you could watch, you know, see it through the eyes of like an 8, 9, or 10-year-old, which is hard to do. But there's certain things we talked about, and we'll get to as far as when you're kids and you watch some of these films, and how you like to, through imaginary play, act out some of the creatures or monsters or different things like that. And that's one of the things that really contributes to how much you enjoy kind of carrying on from the TV what you saw into play. And Godzilla offers a lot of that, I feel. Gamera, I just don't know. Gamera, if you guys don't know, is a prehistoric-looking giant turtle with tusks. He's got the hard shell, of course. He can bring his head and limbs into his body. Right, Pete? You want to talk about some of his special abilities?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got a hard exterior, but once you get to know him, I mean, that soft, soft side just come. Oh wait, no, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, it's a physical. Oh, it was physically a physical thing.
Okay. Yeah. So Gamera can somehow, when he retracts his arms and legs into his shell, he can then somehow flames come out of those holes. And he can use that to either burn an opponent. He can also fly. And when he's got all four of those flames coming out, that allows, I guess, the force allows him to start spinning around rapidly. So as he spins around, as he flies through the air, and will, you know, often crash into buildings and other monsters. Looks great with the, you know, with the old 70s, 60s and 70s Japanese wire stuff. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he's doing this flying stuff, and he's got the hard exterior, and he'll bite on occasion, a little slap fest.
And he can breathe. He can breathe fire too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he just stood around and breathed fire for a little longer, he would wipe these monsters out in a few seconds. And that, I think, that contributes sometimes to some of that so bad it's, you know, you know that he has these other abilities, and you're like, why is he flying right now? Why is he bringing his head in? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in the grand scheme of things.
All right, so I want to do two things that we can segue off of. First, let's give a quick plot summary, and this will be very quick.
Good
because
luck.
There's not much of a plot to this movie. But from there, I want to segue into, you know, because we talk about Godzilla and Gamera, so I want to know, you know, did you, when you were a kid, did you play Godzilla and Gamera, like in your backyard or in the woods and things like that?
Yeah, I used to pick up turtles and throw them over the fence.
Did you throw them like a frisbee? So you're like, hey, look, it's Gamera.
No. The funny thing about that is, if anybody knows me, that, you know, I probably wouldn't touch a turtle if it was even at the zoo or something. But anyway. So your question was just about, you're going to get into the plot. Yeah. Did you do the plot already?
No. Yes.
It seems like you did.
So the plot is the end.
That's it.
as we mentioned on the intro, there's an evil galactic being by the name of Zanon, who is flying around in a really cheap knockoff of a Imperial Star Destroyer. And my theory is because there's a lot of Mazda product placement in this movie, that it's the Mazda of Star Destroyers that this guy's flying around in. And essentially he wants to take over the Earth. So he sends down an evil woman whose job it is to kill three
good luck explaining
space women who are trying to defend the Earth. They don't do much but sit around their apartment and the pet shop and kind of get harassed by this little kid, I have his name here, Keiichi, who is a delusional young boy in brown shorts that can talk to turtles and Gamera. And so
And he also plays music for him with
he's got he's got his own Gamera song that he'll break out.
And an organ.
Whether you want him to play it or not. Yeah, if you have an organ in your apartment, you're out of luck, because Keiichi's going to come in and he's going to start playing his song. But, so Zanna wants to take over the Earth. And so he and his henchwoman, I think her name is Garugi, set forth all these monsters who have appeared in prior Gamera movies to
do the same thing.
Yeah. And so Gamera comes and fights them all and saves the day. And we're not going to give too much away, but the ending, Gamera flies into space because he's killed all the monsters. So now Zanon decides that he's going to just, I don't know, I guess actually start moving the Star Destroyer. It kind of just sits up in space for the entire movie. So Gamera flies into it and sacrifices himself, blows it all up, and the Earth is saved. The space women, who can change into silver superhero outfits but also shrink themselves down to the size of a action figure, end up not having to do much of anything other than just hang out. And
yeah, I have a question for, about that too as we move on. Did you talk about the production company that they were like going bankrupt, so they just kind of spliced previous clips?
Yes.
From the film.
Yeah, it was the company was Daiei, and they were the rival of Toho for a while. Toho is the company that made the Godzilla, I think, and still does own the rights to all the Godzilla movies. And so, yeah, I guess they had fallen on hard times, and they decided, like, let's just do a Gamera movie on the cheap, and we'll just take all this old footage that we already have and a ton of stock footage and just make up a nonsensical plot with a little kid and some space women, and that should, that should be box office bonanza. But it didn't happen, and the next Gamera movie would not be seen for, I think, another 15 years. So,
you know, one of the just getting into the space women thing here for a minute, I never understand a lot of the different human beings or space people's their part in these films and what they're supposed to be doing. Like, clearly there's good and evil here, but the good is they do this really weird thing where they turn themselves from Earth ladies into space ladies by tugging on their ear and then then doing this weird choreographed motion to slurping sounds. I swear that's the exact sound.
Yep.
I have been practicing it for a couple days. And
Then they
wear their spacesuits. They can fly, which they don't really make use of at all. And then they can also shrink, which they also don't make use of except for just to get into a bag. And the question I have for you is, I've seen a lot of these different Godzilla movies with Mothra and different things. What is the fascination with the women shrinking into a handbag so they can get into your handbag and you can carry them around? Because this seems to happen in a lot of these monster movies.
It's a great question. I wish I had an answer for it. I really have no idea. But yeah, between that and the fairies from the Mothra fairies, like the island fairies. It's clearly some trope that they love to use. But I don't know if there's some sociological reason behind that. I have no clue. I really don't.
It almost seems like they have a plot for all these movies and they have ideas for the different characters. And then there's one guy that they call in toward the end. Like, he's the specialist, you know what I mean? Like, just to put it way over the top. And he'll just walk in to the production room and just look at everybody and say, shrinkage, and then just leave. And then everybody knows that one of the characters or more needs to be able to shrink.
Yeah, and that's so then what's going to make it. They just come up with a plot device to shrink them down.
Yeah, because at one point the kid is carrying around the three space women in a bag. And I just did not even know what to make of what I was seeing.
So these space women, what about you? Is there anything that you enjoyed from their piece in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I really wanted to like them because they're good. And, you know, the female characters back then were not in so many of these roles. And there's one girl who's really tall. She's pretty. She's got like short hair and kind of this cool 80s hairstyle and outfit in her earthly outfit, which she changes from. I didn't understand the whole space to earthly outfit thing, because when they're in their spacesuit, they could be seen by the destroyer that shoots the laser. So then they turn back into their earth suit, and then they pretty much can't do anything. So I don't – well, but they do work at pet shops and play the organ.
Yes.
So they do that, but there was something about her, and I wanted her to be a more important character. She played a little bit of a cool role for the kid, but it felt flat really quickly.
Yeah, it was weird because I had the same reaction that you did. Like, I was really kind of intrigued by her. I thought she had, like, for being in, like, a kind of a crummy Japanese monster movie, which I'm sure she knew that she wasn't making, you know, a piece of cinematic art here. I felt like she was kind of going along with it and having fun with it. I thought she had, like, at least some decent screen presence, and I had to look her up because, of course, I did. Because especially compared to the other two, like, there's three space women in this, and she completely overshadows the other two. Like, the other two probably don't even need to be in this movie. But
yeah, they don't do anything.
You know, you may be surprised to know that the woman, that the lead space woman, whose character name is Kalara, was played by Mak Fumiari, who was apparently a singer and wrestler.
Yeah, I knew all that.
Okay. So you knew. You know Fumiari's story then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, everybody does, so I'm sorry, I didn't mean to belittle your research.
Yeah, I'm just trying
But no, I mean, that is interesting. No, that's interesting. So, a wrestler, though, I mean, she was really big. I mean, she was, like, gigantic compared to the other two girls.
Yes, yes.
And then they had they did have one bad space woman who basically got nothing done. She's the most inept bad guy, if you will, that I've ever seen.
Which may have been, I don't know, that may have been the funniest, like, recurring thing throughout the movie, was that she was so inept, but yet Xanon, the big bad guy, who you never see, just can't be bothered with doing it. You know, he keeps threatening to, you know, punish her and then execute her. And she's like, you know, she talks to him on a wristwatch, kind of like, you know, Hasselhoff in Knight Rider. And she's like, no, I swear this time I'll succeed. I guarantee it. Please just let me, you know, this time we'll attack by water. And all right, I got nothing better to do. Go ahead. And then that's literally what he says. It's, you know, when she begs for her life. Okay.
Well, the first time she fails, he said, "This was your last chance." And then
she gets five more or six more.
Yeah, he gets like five or six more chances. Each one, you know, there's no threats anymore after you threaten to kill somebody. It's kind of like, all right, but we'll see what happens this next time.
And we should point out that we did watch the dubbed version, so that's probably setting back the dialogue.
Yeah, it adds some bad points to some of those movies. You know what I mean? Like, the bad to good, if you will, some of the enjoyment and just seeing the over, like, the dubbing is always overacted, you know, and shouted, and just, it's just completely off.
Yes. And really goofy, really goofy voices too sometimes.
You know what? Actually, though, come to think of it, there's like one or two just random dialogue moments, like one where the kids, this is like the stereotypical, like, bunch of kids are bothering a young professional in a shop or something, and like just bouncing around and making noise, and he yells like, "What's it?" or something like that. Like, just some random.
Yeah, they go to scare him, and he's like, "Hey, what's that?"
Yeah, just
and what's that is three kids, like, you know, yelling at him. That's what that is.
Yeah, and then again, you don't know if these things are lost in translation or what, but then they have the where the bad lady keeps trying to convince the kid that Gamera's going to die each time he wins, and she keeps, so she has to pretend, because the boy doesn't know that she's bad, so she has to pretend that she's good and is happy that Gamera wins. So, "I will take you to hamburger lunch."
Yeah, that's her way of getting in the kid's good grace. "I will take you to hamburger lunch." Meanwhile, I mean, this is 1980. So we're obviously a few decades in the past here, but, you know, kids' parents are hardly anywhere to be found throughout this movie.
Oh, no.
Mom, like, shows up randomly, like, he's sleeping in bed with the bad woman. Like, after they try to redeem her, like, the space woman and Kiichi try to redeem her. So she sleeps over in the boy's bed, and all of a sudden, Mom just kind of pops up like she was laying on the floor the whole time. It was just really... Well, I'm not saying anything untoward happened, but it was just kind of crazy.
But even before that, like, he's having these dreams, and you can't really tell what's dream and what's reality. And he's yelling, he's like infatuated with Gamera, and he's yelling Gamera's name. And his mom keeps waking up in the same room as him, like on the next bed. So then later on, when he's in that same room and mom's nowhere to be found, and then this lady's in bed with it. It's just so strange. Yeah.
I mean, and it would actually be an interesting movie, because I think Godzilla did something too with like the kid, that one of the Godzilla movies where he's like imagining the whole thing.
Yes.
And you can't tell in this movie if the kid is imagining Gamera or not, because it could really go either way. But I think that would actually be a more interesting take on the movie, mm-hmm. would be, you know, how much is in the kid's mind as opposed to what's actually happening.
Right. What's your take on some of these monsters that Gamera fights? I mean, I have my own idea of, you know, most of any rubber monster is going to be in the so bad category.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to start it off with like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. So it's like, kind of starts from the so bad. What makes one of them or any of them so bad they're good? Especially as a kid, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I remember as a kid, obviously I remember as a kid really enjoying these movies, and mm-hmm. you know, we didn't know any better from better special effects. So it was a lot easier, I think, to suspend our disbelief maybe. And looking at them now, I can get a much, you know, way more entertainment value out of it than I did when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, it was all about, I really wish I was on this planet with Gamera fighting these monsters and these evil aliens. Like, that would be, like, the coolest thing ever. Mm. And now I just look at, you know, and wonder what went into people's minds when they had to design, like Giron, who, you know, basically is like a narcoleptic steak knife, and, you know, but somehow shoots ninja stars at the side of the blade. And
when he gets sleepy, though,
yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, I'm not sure his eyes open fully the entire scene, and these scenes are all like cut because they're taken from other movies. So Gamera dispatches all of these monsters, and I think there's like six or seven in total in the span of about, you know, 2 minutes apiece. So they're like really quick, and he kills them all.
In fairness to the Giron monster, like your whole entire head, like your almost your whole being is a giant steak knife, right? And like you realize you could maybe cut the underbelly of Gamera, but then you go to the shell and it just nothing is happening. Like that is kind of disheartening. I mean, because that's all you got. You know, you start flinging some Chinese stars out of your eyes. You know, that's neither here nor there for Gamera. But like, you get that giant knife, and it's just not cutting it, for lack of a better, you know, description. I mean, don't you just kind of give up at that point?
Well, I mean, can you imagine how it felt to, you know, you grow up and you basically look like a steak knife. So you got to deal with all that ridicule growing up. But then when you get older, it's pretty cool. Like my head is like a steak knife. Like all the things that I can do with this. And then
when you're younger, it's different because you stick out. And then when you're old, well, no pun intended. And then when you're older, it's all about use, right? It's all about function in society.
Right. So
yeah, sorry.
Yeah. But you know, you start to come into yourself and be like, hey, you know, this is actually a pretty cool thing that, you know, that I've got going on here. And then you come across Gamera and, you know, this unique feature of your body that you've been building up to be, you know, your defining feature has absolutely no effect on this giant flaming flying turtle. So, you know, I don't know where you go from there. Do you end up just kind of cutting friends, you know, meat for them? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you have, you know, you got to think that on some of these planets, these monsters run into similar beings and whatnot. So if he did have like a fork-headed friend, then you could have a meal right there. I mean, with a knife only, you're limited. But with a knife and fork, or, you know, spork, whatever you got to work with, you could probably throw some meat down.
That's an easy team up right there. Like, how do you know? Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe Giron spent the rest of his life kind of just roaming around trying to find that fork-headed monster to, you know, to form that partnership.
Well, and sadly, he's probably the most formidable monster in this movie, other than the random guy that shoots darts, which completely disintegrate like miles of circles on the ground.
Yeah, like some really interesting special effects in this one. I mean, we could probably spend a whole episode just talking about the monsters, but I mean, you got like Gaios, who, you know, I think would make a nice garden tool. Like he's kind of kind of like his head looks like a anvil slash like spade that, you know.
Somebody ironed it a couple times. A couple shirts on it.
The one that it was bothering me. The one, the squid looking monster, Beerus.
Yes.
I was trying to picture. I'm like the thing's face reminded me of something, and I had to go back and look at it again, and I finally figured out what it was. His face looks like Tom Servo from MST3K. If you took Tom Servo, which was like the gumball machine with like the little beak, you know, robot for those of you that don't know, and you took like just the face and then packed it into like a squid costume, that would be Verus in this movie.
Well, and this movie was made on the cheap. Like they completely left out how this monster comes together. I had to go read up on it because I did not understand. They have all these monsters that have different abilities, and this thing's a giant squid. And the only thing it appeared to do was make its head pointy at times.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that really is all it did.
Yeah. And then it died. But I mean, it's just, you know, you had other things that were, one thing is shooting. There is a monster, I'm not making this up, that shoots gigantic rainbows, like, and now you know, like all the way across, you know, the continent and blows up things with these giant rainbow lasers. And another one is incinerating miles upon miles of ground. And then this guy is giant squid and his head gets pointy. And I did not understand it at all.
I'm not sure we're really meant to understand it. It just, you know, it's just crazy.
But does that fall into this? Like, to me, that's like so bad. It's that's not good at that point. Like so bad. It's like it's got to have some over the top ability.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, I think, you know what I mean? You know, with the exception of a couple of scenes, like Xanon, you can always yelling at the woman for not coming through. That was
great comedy.
That was cracking me up when they would when the space woman would go in their little brown van and drive around, and all of a sudden would like. Really horrible, like matte special effects. The thing would just kind of lift off up from the highway and like turn into like a oval orange dot flying through the air. That was pretty funny because that was just, you know, that's just like next level horrible special effects. But yeah, but the monsters themselves, unfortunately, I mean, it wasn't a so bad it's good. More other than the steak knife, like that one, I could watch the steak knife in action, you know, cutting through cans and shoe leather.
Well, here's a so bad it's good moment, which is one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen in a movie or a monster movie or anything that I've seen a monster do to another monster. Was Gamera celebrating when it defeated this fish-like monster by playing its backbones like a xylophone.
That was pretty crazy.
Sounds like I just made that up.
So I keep coming back to this steak knife thing, but it really it was far and above the best monster and utensil in this movie.
Double award.
But it's also, I don't remember what the original movie with Gamera, but it's one when people think of Gamera, I think is the scene that anyone that knows what Gamera is would remember. That's not like a hardcore fan. And it's, of course, it's Gamera fighting the steak knife on some alien planet. But then in the middle of the fight, Gamera decides to do some gymnastics.
Of course.
And he's, you know, kind of looping around the bar.
Well, first he leaps into the air like a ridiculous height, which is awesome.
Yeah. But then, you know, he does like the dismount and he puts his hands up like he's celebrating, like he's expecting like some judges to, you know, to throw up the tens for him. But and it's so painfully obvious too that it's not even a guy in a suit. Like it's just really, it's like a miniature model. There's like a plastic turtle and, you know, there's some guy just off camera with like a crank, like cranking him around the bar.
Well, and I love the fact they give you a little extra. And this is, to me, this is where it gets into the so bad it's good. There are moments in a movie or in entertainment or in life where you know something is bad, right? And you're like, eh. And then the person pushes it over the top because they have that just undying need to entertain. So you have Gamera basically doing like backflips like over the bar while he's holding on, and then he does that like he does that carnival ride thing where he slows to the stop like right up at the top, and then you're like, eh, and then he just starts going the other way. Mm-hmm. And there's just something, your inner child just giggles when you see that, because it should have ended and it was bad enough, but now he's going to start spinning the other way like three more times and then do his dismount.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, you know, somebody wrote that. Somebody came up with that, choreographed that, and it really did become Gamera's defining move, yeah. Which is just, yeah. We're joking about it, and it's, you know, if you know monster movies, you know that move.
Yeah.
So it's just and really every turtle should learn that move. I mean, you know, I hate to get serious. Sometimes we get serious on the So Bad It's podcast, and it's, you know, it's usually when it's about safety. So it's important for most, you know, turtles to know that move. So I would definitely recommend looking it up. But
I would have liked to have seen a helmet and some knee and elbow pads.
Oh, for the safety aspect?
Yeah, because you know, mm-hmm. you know how these things happen with turtles.
Yes.
And the last thing you want is, you know, a broken shell, broken spine, and then before you know it, you've got a quadriplegic turtle on your hands, and that's not good for anyone.
No. Turtle athletic safety is very important and not something that should be taken lightly, especially when you're going to go and then, you know, turn around and battle a steak knife.
Right.
So,
all right, so,
you know,
so I've got a question. So,
yeah.
So we saw this movie and, you know, it unfortunately it doesn't really hold up in the so bad it's good category. I'll probably come up with another adjective.
Yeah, not as a full movie.
It. Yeah, and it's really long. I mean, we were watching it on, because it's available on YouTube, so if you really want to check it out, you can watch it on YouTube for free. And, you know, and I probably should know this, but I don't, and I'm not going to apologize, but on on the length it said like 132, and John and I couldn't figure out if that meant it was 90 minutes or 132 minutes, you know, like an hour and a half or 132 minutes. To be honest with you, it felt like 132 months that we were watching. It is not a quick-paced movie, despite all the stuff that's going on. And
yeah, I had to get up and do stretches and just check my pulse a couple times. I mean, there are a couple funny moments and a couple interesting things with the fights. And I think as a kid, you know, you definitely enjoy some of the fights. Like if you sitting there on YouTube and you know, scan right to them and just watch them, it might be okay. But otherwise, my goodness.
Right. Ugh, and I'm trying to remember when I was a kid, and John and I grew up in on Long Island in New York. Don't hold that against us. Please don't turn off the podcast yet.
Yep. So, well, we brought it up at the end.
So we kind of grew up with, and I'm sure this is also all over the country, but I'm specifically, you know, ABC, Channel 7, during the week, sometimes it would be like monster week. So every day you come home from school and at 4 o'clock, they'd have a different monster movie. Or on Saturday mornings, it was always, you know, you get to watch Godzilla movies or Dracula, you know, King Kong, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And this is what we grew up with. And it was awesome. And I'm trying to, you know, remember what it was like when I was a kid. I obviously love these movies and I would,
well,
you know, and I would be psyched when they would come on. But I also remember that there was certain one of those that I knew to kind of avoid. Mm-hmm. Like there were certain Godzilla movies, like the one when I was younger, I didn't like the one where it was the kid basically running from the bad guys.
Right.
It was basically all in his mind.
I think one of the things is you wanted to think it was real, but then you also, as a young kid, you and I seem to have a similar type imagination where you want to go outside, you want to pretend to be having these battles. So you could do that with the superheroes and throw capes on, and you can do that even with Godzilla a little bit, try to mimic Godzilla. But to try to mimic a giant prehistoric turtle, let alone a big steak knife, I mean, can you imagine two kids having that battle out in front of the house? You know what I mean? Like people would call the authorities. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what I was trying to remember, because I know for a fact, I remember distinctly like pretending that I was Godzilla and stomping around, mm-hmm. and there was nothing better than playing Godzilla in the wintertime, if only mm-hmm. because when you could see your breath, I used to pretend that was Godzilla's atomic breath. And I would just, like, you know, blow my breath onto the sidewalk and pretend that I was, you know,
Yeah, like,
you know, as melting, you know, thousands of people, and it was great.
Well, it's Gamera. What are you going to do? Like hurl yourself into the air over a fence or something?
Right, which you know, I wouldn't put past myself doing. I mean, I also used to run around the yard with a beach towel around my neck.
Yeah.
In the summertime, pretending I was the greatest American hero, and I would literally throw myself into a pine tree because, you know, if anyone remembers that show, like, the guy couldn't really fly because he didn't know his superpowers. So I thought that was the greatest thing ever till I would walk into the house and my mom would be like, how do you have all these scratches all over your face? Like, hey, greatest American hero, Mom. What are you going to do?
So we're saying – I think we're saying that, like, if, to be good – and to hold up, you know, some of these monsters had to have some kind of quality where you could play them and imitate them and then think back as an adult and be like, remember the time that I was the, you know, was Godzilla, and nobody, I don't remember anybody in my community being like, I want to be the steak knife monster. Like, no, I just, you know, I want to be the one that looks like an anvil that somebody ironed their shirt on. Like, there's just, I don't know, there was just no redeeming quality for some of these other monsters. The squid thing had potential, and it just went nowhere.
No, but that's an awesome point, though, because I can remember, you know, I have a younger brother, but I would, you know, when we would play stuff like that with Godzilla monsters, like, you can be like, oh, I'm going to be Godzilla. You can be Mechagodzilla. So, you know, and you can do, like, the robotic moves where you would, like, you know, jerk your arm around like it had, like, the missiles coming out of its fingers and things like that. Like, that stuff was cool and it was fun. But you're right. You couldn't do that with Gamera because, like, these other monsters really weren't lending themselves to, you know, unless you were pretending and that they were there and your friends weren't involved. I don't know. Yeah,
Well, if these monsters are attacking Japan, would you do, like, you know, play with your Matchbox cars and Hot Wheels and pretend like they're – and tanks and stuff like that? What would you do? You literally go and get a steak knife and start cutting into one of the trucks? Like, I don't even understand how you would pretend that. So I think we're trying to say here that the monsters definitely kind of brought down some of the credibility, as did the dialogue and the fact that it was the Cliff's Notes version of Gamera. I'd say, you know, fast forward through to some of the scenes because some of it's golden. You got to hear the bad guy giving the agent one more chance every time he tells her this is the last chance. And you need to see the kid play an entire made up song on the organ for Gamera. I mean, that is definitely worth, you know, forget about America's Got Talent. I mean, this kid's got more talent than anybody I've ever seen combined.
Especially with, like, the space woman sitting there watching them play and kind of, like, bopping their heads from side to side, like, trying to be polite, like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cute. Getting a little bit old. But, you know, the kid's just giving it his all. He is loving every second of it.
There's such a lack of entertainment in the lady's face and movement that she's not even clapping her hands to pretend. Like, she's clapping against the back of a knuckle or something, almost like, I guess I need to move my hands. It's just, it's embarrassing. But you should be embarrassed, too, and you should go watch clips of Gamera Super Monster. Is that
Gamera Super Monster, yeah. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's especially as now that we're older, you can see, like, the cynicism of this. I mean, from what I read, I think there was only between, like, 2 and 3 new minutes of Gamera footage of Gamera itself. And I think it's pretty easy to spot because it looked like a Macy's Day Parade float with just, like, kind of its mouth opening and closing. It's really they really did it on the cheap.
Yeah. So what would you say for this whole movie if you had to put it in a so bad it's category?
I would, you know, if I had to give it, I would give it a so bad it's disappointing. I was hoping for a little more of that kitsch factor that can certainly be had in watching some of these old movies. But I think we probably would have been better served to pick just a random other Gamera movie that was like a fully produced one rather than this clip.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard to say. I do the Xanon thing and the space woman are definitely pretty funny. unintentionally so. So that yes. that was worth my time. Absolutely worth my time. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm giving it the kind of so bad it's worth fast forwarding through most, but you know, you should watch some 30-second clips. I know that's a really long sentence and label, but I mean, it is worth it for some of these little things. It's okay to go watch the 2-minute fights. Gamer makes such quick work of his foes, and it is entertaining to watch a giant prehistoric turtle beat up on squids and knives and things of that nature.
And those
and also play the xylophone.
Right. And those battle scenes are all pretty quick. So that is mm-hmm. one good thing about it. Like, you don't really have to like slog through a 5-minute battle that just looks ridiculous. I mean, you get to see some nice turtles and steak knives suspended by wires, like being hurled into one another and knocking over, you know, small miniature sets. So, I mean, there's always going to be some entertainment value to be had in that.
Well, I think that's it for our first podcast. We're going to wrap up, and I'm going to say on behalf of myself, John, and my friend here, Pete, thank you for joining us for our first podcast. And we hope you join us for some future podcasts on So Bad It's, where we take a look and delve into books and comics and video games and all kinds of fun pop culture.
And if you are actually interested in these type of movies and want to get, you know, a more professional or informed opinion, you can check out the Kaiju Cast, which is an awesome podcast run by this guy, Kyle Yount, out on the West Coast. They basically will take an actual movie and he has his friends kind of get together and watch it, and they will offer their thoughts and what they like, didn't like about it. It's actually really cool. So if you are interested, you should check that out. And you should also check us out on Twitter, where you can follow us at So Badcast. So please do that, and we will hopefully be seeing you again in the near future with another episode that will amaze and astound.
Yeah, keep it bad.
Keep it so bad.